You're listening to Of Slights and Men with Benji and Jacob.
Well, hello and welcome back to Of Slights and Men. Today I'm joined by a very special guest, Valentin. I am absolutely delighted to have you on the podcast. We met in Blackpool. If you haven't heard of Valentin, you need to. He's working on some incredible projects right now, including Sonore, which was probably one of the biggest, if you want to call it that, winners of Blackpool. Everyone that I was speaking to was telling me, oh man, you have to go see him perform the thing with the harmonica. It's going to blow your mind. In fact, one of our favorite moments from Blackpool was hearing Biz from Big Blind Media talk about your trick. He was like, he has a ring on, but it can't be the ring. It can't be the ring. So, an absolute buzz around you at Blackpool. And then talking to you and doing research around you, I also know that a lot of what you want to do is really explore what magic means and try through your magic to share love with your audience, to have like a truly magical experience with people that perform for. hopefully that's a decent summary. Yeah, I know that's like you said, it's hard to say that in words, but yeah.
It's hard to say. Yeah. Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone that is listening on the podcast. And thank you for the great introduction. Wow. I'm a little bit shy, so thank you very much. Thank you for that intro, and I'm more than happy to be received on Of Slights and Men. So I'm really eager for this conversation. So it's great.
Likewise. Super happy. Okay, well, let's just start. I'm just genuinely interested. What's kind of your background? Have you always been a performer? Have you always been doing magic? How did you actually get into magic in the first place?
Yeah, interesting. So most of kids fall into magic because they received a magic box. Christmas, right? Well, this is none of my case.
Yay!
I have a story, which is actually a true story. I was 5 years old when I was so my grandfather was a baker, and I was walking with my grandmother towards his bakery, and there is a cinema on the way, and so I was 5 years old, and there is a huge waiting line in front of the movie theater. And my grandmother, with her craziness that I inherited from, I think, she stops by and asks a couple, "Wow, well, is the movie so crazy that so many people are going to watch it, you know?" And the couple says, "Yeah, we watched it once, and so we're coming back." She turns to me, you know, and she asks me if I want to see it. And so I was 5 years old, and I sit in front of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Oh wow!
And, oh, that's man, so cool. I think like the movie itself, the story, the material, just because I hadn't read the book before, so it was my first experience ever with Harry Potter, and I don't know, the way they treated magic, you know, it's really important in the way I see magic today. I think it dived literally into my unconscious part and my vision of art and. Specifically my vision of magic. So that's how I started. And so I told you I like talking. So
no, that's great.
And my background is I studied physics and mathematics until the age of 22, 23. So nice. really away from magic. But what happened is, in and out with magic. I really started practicing card manipulations on YouTube and all, the first things by the age of 18. And since then, I finished my education. I went to an engineering school. I don't know if you know it in France, but we have like prep schools. It's like two intensive years of studying physics and mechanics and other subjects in order to attend French Ivy Leagues engineering school. So that's what I did because people told me I was good. So I followed them a little bit. And so it was only like 2 months ago that I quit my other job. I was working in a big car company, you know, building equipment companies. Mm-hmm. And I was working on intelligent cars, indoor localization, indoor radar, in order to detect if someone forgot a children or someone or a dog inside a car. And I was called. I needed to work more and give more time to Sonar. So through a long process with myself, with my coworkers and all, I ended up quitting the job. And that's where we are right now, let's say. Well,
wow.
So that's my background a little bit. So yeah, engineering, mathematics, physics, and mostly magic. Yeah.
That's really cool. So I guess, I mean, it kind of feels like the natural transition from that point. You quit your job to work on Sonar. Do you want to tell everyone a little bit about Sonar?
Yeah. So what I forgot to mention is that like alongside working, I started doing some gigs, magic gigs, and working on Sonar. So Sonar is a project that arrived, that sort of came up in 2017. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, I think so something caught me in sound. So Sonar, what is Sonar? It's a project of a tool, of a creative tool and a performing tool designed for magicians, amateur magicians and worker magicians, to give the possibility of a magician to make sound appear out of thin air with hands out of pockets at all time, to bring something more to close-up magic, stand-up magic, parlor magic, and a little bit to stage magic, which I have actually tested not a long time ago, several times, to see the extension of this project, what are the limits and all. And Sonar arrived in 2017 in my mind. There are other projects which I had never heard of before, but 20 years ago, other projects of people using radio in order to make sound appear already existed. And I think one of the first inspirations came from a few different things. For instance, if you are aware of Leonard Green work, he has the snap deal, which is usually called also the laser deal. But what is fascinating about that is that he's using, so he's making a card disappear. But what is weird about that is that we hear the sound of the card being dealt on the table. And this specificity, you know, this added layer on the magic he puts, is sort of a part of what brought Sonar to as an idea to make it possible to make sound appear, any type of sound appear for a magician, let's say. So. I always felt that there was something specific about sound that has been unused in magic. Someone was talking about, you know, horror films with suspense and all, and horror films or Batman movies, you know, they always say that it's more frightening if you don't see the threat, you know.
Yeah.
If the threat is hidden in the darkness, well, first of all, you don't know where it is. You know, you don't know if it's here or not. And then if you start hearing the threats, it explains that maybe the threat is here around you, but you don't know exactly where. You know, you don't know like the suspense is intention up until you have the visual confirmation of the threat being here in front of you and all. And I think it's part of that. I think sound is the promise. I don't know how to say that in English, but is the possibility of something being here without having the visual confirmation. So sound brings that. So sound as itself can be a very, very good convincer in magic, and can bring to my mind a great added layer on most of the magic tricks we have. I think it can better the experience for the audience. And I think it can also bring a lot of new things, a lot of new magic I haven't thought of yet. So I'm eager for the magicians to also have this in their hands, because it's been a great tool so far. So
that's brilliant. And for anyone that can't quite like picture it, imagine you're in the street and Valentin isn't holding anything in his hands, and then he pulls out of his pocket a harmonica and starts to play it. And then as he stops playing the harmonica, you realize, well, I don't even know how to quite describe it. He just takes a bite of the harmonica, and then you realize that it's not actually a harmonica, it's a wafer. It's actually, like, there was nothing there in the first place. Or for instance, you both hold an imaginary beer glass to each other, and as they touch imaginarily, I guess like, in your imagination in the air, you hear like the clink. The clink sound, exactly. So hopefully that gives people listening at home like a good idea of kind of just sort of impact this magic can have. And if you want to see it performed as well, you can head over to our YouTube at The Daily Magician. It's featured in our Secret Magic of the Blackpool Magic Convention. Yeah. It's one of the first clips there as well. But it's some really impactful stuff, man. I love what you're saying as well about the impact of like sound manipulation. Because the only person I've really heard talk about that in the way that you're talking about it is actually Danny Goldsmith, who does a lot of sound manipulation.
His work on the coins. That is great. That is, I think it's very like, I don't have the adjective in English, but it can touch into something deeper in the perception of the audience. I think so. Like, if you think about magic, what are we, like, that's my vision, but what are we willing to do as magician? Like 90, maybe 95%, maybe more of magic is a surprise. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong with the numbers, but we intend to surprise our audience by being entertaining. We want the wow, the shouts from them and all. But in the end, what's happening is that we're trying to trigger emotions inside them. Let it be at first, surprise, but it can be joy, it can be sadness in a way they accept it, or sometimes them being afraid. And one of the entrances towards emotion is, I think, because emotion is part of the body's language, to my mind. So I think we got to learn how to talk the language of the body, not body language, but the language of the body. So as, for instance, sound is one of the five biggest sensors, but we have like tons of sensors in our skins and all, which explains why PK touch is so interesting as an effect also, because it's like kinesis magic. Sound is also something we ought to explore, to my mind. And I think like I'm super happy and super excited about Sono, because I think it's only in the first person of the work that can be done with sound. So because we're touching we're at the frontier of the perception, the human perception, just placing ourselves at that location.
It's really interesting. I'd be interested to know, so was the deal from Leonard Green that first inspired you? I obviously, without getting into how Sonore actually works, how did you kind of, what did the development process look like for Sonore to get? Because I feel like a lot of people would be like, yes, we should do more sound manipulation. But how did you get from there to actually producing something that allows you to do the effects the way you do?
Yeah, I think one of the first thing I did was, so it's not like literally how it works now, but one of the first thing I did was recording, like the first step was recording with my phone me dealing cards, and I put the audio on, and I filmed myself with another phone to see what would be the effect of me just dealing cards, invisible cards, no cards in the beginning, and see what would be the effect on me. And I found it interesting. I remember me being in a famous magic shop and imagining these things about how it would be interesting to be able to have the sound of flicking a card without having a card flicked, without having a card in your hands. That would be sort of disturbing. That's what I felt in the beginning. And there started sort of a flame, you know, sort of an inspiration started growing and living inside of me, like coming from the heart and all. So that's what nourished me, like getting on and on and on this project. And so I started, I can talk about the two first effects that I explored with a Sonore. The first one was, I worked a little bit with Jonathan Levitt, an American magician, which I love. So the idea was to mimic taking a photograph using the sound, like making the sound of a shutter appear. And and then around that, you can build a magic trick if you want, like you like to create something actually like very classical. You have a card chosen or a card forced. You take a photograph, you have it in your mind, and you mimic something like printing in your outside jacket pocket, you know, something like that. And the card is white, then you have light appear in your front pocket, and then you have the Six of Hearts printed, for instance. So this was something like, this was one of the first effects thought of, which I haven't showed actually in Blackpool. But it's great if you, it gives you the possibility to create wider stories or wider possibilities in the magic trick. And the second one was something more of an exploration. You know, I've always been fascinated about hypnosis, you know, imaginary journey, visualization, active visualization. And I had an animal chosen by a spectator, which actually was a whale. And I was in a I was trying something of making them feel like they were the animal, and imagining themselves like with the eyes shut, moving in the environment, and moving and seeing the nature around them. And at the end, I was trying to draw the actual animal, and by taking the paper I was drawing on and throwing it in a cap, the splash sound would appear. I've always been fascinated into bringing, like, starting from the imagination world, you know, inside the audience, and making it real, but in tiny bits, you know. We're bringing the imaginary world and the reality closer by actually creating a door between the two of them. And this door can actually be sound. So that was part of it, and it's the same type of a path that has been taken into the click sound. You know, you ask someone what is their favorite drink, and by having them imagining smelling the drink, drinking it, and they're actually stimulating their senses and all, and bing, we get a ting, which brings their imagination to the real world. So that was the beginning of the journey, and then I started talking to it about friends, magicians' friends, and it was the early stages of the, and most of the people didn't get what I was sensing, you know, how it would be interesting to make sound appear. They thought it would be we would have too many constraints about having such a tool or being able to do that. But I don't know. What I've worked on, like, for the past 2 years is improving even more the sort of prototypes I was having, and by showing it to magicians' friends and putting my ego on the side and listening to their feedbacks, you know. And thanks to a few friends, it has become a great toy to play with, let's say. Like, I would have a lot of things to say on the progression of the prototype, but it would give a little bit about how it works.
Yeah. I think the fascinating thing about sound is, and I have to credit Danny because he drew my attention to this, Danny Goldsmith, but it was like, the fascinating thing about sound is we don't actually, because we're not like dogs or whatever, we have like ears on the side of our head. We can't like triangulate sound, so we don't actually know where sound comes from. So our mind just makes that mental association. You know, it's like we see someone, I don't know, jingling keys, and we make the association that the sound is coming from there. So I feel like that's kind of the fascinating thing with sound manipulation, is your mind will just fill in the gaps because it doesn't actually know, it can't actually triangulate where any one sound is coming from, which makes the sort of stuff you're doing just incredibly fooling, and I feel like far more effective than maybe people would give it credit at first.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's interesting you say that. We have a few clips of like there is an effect of you know, it's not the toasting clink between two glasses, but it's just me asking someone to picture their glass in front of them, an actual glass, and then I ask them to to put that picture in their mind, to engrave it in their mind, and then I say, okay, I have nothing in my hand. I just sat on the bench. On the table, you know, bench and table with two benches. And I ask everyone to shh, to say shh. Okay. I move the glass. I take my time. I come back. And then I clink the glass right where it was. And they, like, generally have the impression the clink was coming from the very location where the glass was. And, yeah, we have to thank the brain for that. Because they're actually following the gesturing we're doing. So a part of the work was understanding that the way I move, the type of movement I do, is very, very important so that we can fool the brain even more. And what's funny is that when you, and I have to thank him again, you know, Bees, for talking so well about Sonor and so good about Sonor, is that on the video you have on the Daily Magician on YouTube, we see him doing the same mimic as I'm doing. So I'm really happy about that because I've worked on that. And another example which can be added on this is that recently I was I wrote a 10-minute show and a 3-minute show using Sonors so that it could be a crash test on stage magic. And at one moment, I did a parasite move, you know, which triggered a sound before it should have been triggered. You know, the sound of a clinking on a bottle to make a bottle appear afterwards. Mm-hmm. And there is two clink sounds. And I was opening a towel at this moment and we hear ting on the recording. And then like 3 or 4 seconds after that, there is another clink. But I heard it, and as a magician, I didn't even move about that. I didn't react it, you know. My inner speech didn't reflect it on that and all. So people didn't notice anything, you know. So if you do not act when the sound comes out, if it's not a, you know, a harmonica sound, but if it's something like very specific on that, they won't notice. But of course, had I had the possibility to, you know, to not do a parasite move on this one, they would have been like, if I mimic having the bottle in my hands, so, oh, this one is here, I do clean, and then I do a classic bottle appearance by rotating on myself, for instance, without a balloon or without a cloth, just rotating on myself. Well, this clink sound is actually amazing. They saw the bottle in my hand. They're starting to, you know, to imagine it becoming real, and then it becomes real. So, so Danny is absolutely right. Thanks to the imperfection of the brain, we can bring that into, and actually we have before Blackpool, we arrived in Manchester and we stayed one night. And so I have a friend, Reda, spelled R-E-D-A, he likes to say that. He filmed most of the footage from Sonor we had in Manchester and in Blackpool. So I'd like to thank him once again here. We have a clip of a spectator, like like clinking on the table where I did the sonar thing again to try to find. And he says, like, the sound came from here, man. It came from here. So we actually have the confirmation of that. So it's baffling. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I can't wait. Is there any sort of time that, like, do you have any sort of idea of when the product will actually eventually be coming out?
We're actually working every day on it. I don't have a specific date. Still, sorry about that, but probably a few weeks, month. That's what I can say for now.
Oh, wow.
Definitely.
That's pretty soon.
But definitely 2024. This
nice.
So I'm giving a, like in French we say in fourchette, a fork, you know, an in between, mm-hmm. like weeks, month,
yeah,
but definitely in 2024. So it gives me time. Yeah also like nice. I feel like there is so much to work on and to, you know, to prepare for sonar so that people can actually project mm-hmm. themselves. You know, a lot of people have different type of magic, and I think it can apply to a lot of different type of magic. So that's also part of the, you know, the tool now, the creative tool and the performance tool is ready in a way. But I feel like there is also a work to be done, a prep work, you know, for the magician to project themselves in their type of magic. So it's actually also very exciting.
Yeah, man, that's hype. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure all of us are.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so, yeah, and probably you most of all. So, yeah, I mean, I guess moving forward from that, I'd be interested to know, because when I lived in France, I actually, like, even when I was performing, I don't know, first of all, I didn't meet many magicians, well, I didn't meet any magicians at all. And then secondly, when I performed magic for people in France, it was oftentimes their first time that they'd ever seen a magician perform. So I'm just wondering kind of what is like the magic scene like in France? Maybe it's better. I don't know if you're closer to Paris. I was more in the south, but I don't know how the magic scene is. I'd just love to know more about what magic looks like in France.
Yeah. So I live in Paris. I actually have Paris in front of me right now. I can see. We like there's been in and outs the magic scene in France. We obviously have a great community, like a great community of magicians. We have we also have like circles, the Magical Circle of Paris, and probably like in the south as well. I'm not the best person to talk about this type of scene because I've lived outside of Paris when I was young, and then with a school and all, I've been away from that. So my experience with magicians in France is actually meeting some of them in magic shop I discovered lately, let's say. So, and I moved on from friends to connections to, you know, to meeting people like that. So I don't really know about the organization, for instance, the FISM and all, or the... not FISM, but the FFAP, you know, we have like these sort of big associations, big communities around, we have Virtual Magi, which is actually big, but I'm not the best one to talk about that. Regarding the way magic is received, it's often told that French audience are actually hard, which is actually... true and false. I mean, it's like in any part of the world. Let's say Parisians can sometimes be a little bit demanding on magic. You know, it's hard to to unsettle them, or it's hard to make them move and go into their emotions because it's part of the French culture, maybe. But I've had some great experience with French people also, so let's not make a truth about that. And what is good is that we have more and more magicians received on French TV. Now we have the Got Talent show, of course, but we also have like on big channels, magicians received even more and even more. It's not like in America. No, it's not like in Ellen DeGeneres, you know, scene and all, on Jimmy Kimmel's and everything, but we definitely had like great moments of magicians and mentalists received on TV. So it's different from the Spanish scene, I think. In Spanish thing, in like they show that they are sharing love around their magic, and people are always happy on TV too. Like to be seated around the table, around, you know, Danny Dantes or Juan Tamariz. But it's quite different in France. We also have like a different way of trading magic. Actually, like modern magic was sort of brought in France, you know, with Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin, and he brought the sort of the distinguished and elegant vision of the magician. So definitely we have that, like around Blois, where Robert Houdin was living. We have like a magic museum and the House of Magic, you know. So it's something they're proud of. My family's coming from there as well. So
that's cool.
We definitely have a story, and it's evolving every day, let's say. But that was a vague answer, but that's what I can tell about.
No, it's good. I like it. It was very poetic, a little mysterious as well.
Yeah.
I briefly interrupt this podcast to give a quick shout out to our newsletter. If you go to www.dailymagician.com/books, you'll be able to claim 24 magic books for free, as well as sign up for our daily newsletter. In this newsletter, we share tons of incredible content, just like this podcast, as well as providing you with amazing exclusive offers from fantastic magicians. That's www.thedailymagician.com/books.
So I'd love to know, in terms of, so you're someone that studied, like you said maybe there aren't many similarities between your studies and magic, but I'd love to know what from your studies did you learn that helped you when it comes to performing, if anything.
I have learned that through my studies in science that nature is always taking the path of least effort, let's say. We study laws of equilibrium, momentum, and everything, and nature is always taking the path of least energy. And I think it's something which is very, very important in magic. That do you know the KISS principle, the keep it simple, stupid? I think, We tend sometimes to, I don't have a specific example in mind, but in magic, and it's great also, it's part of magic, but sometimes we tend to try to find like very, very specific ways of very complex solutions about creating magic and all. And I was part of that. I have like a very old notebook in front of me with the first drawings of Solar. And on the sides, I have other drawings, you know, of me building things and writing, you know, equations of how to build things. So first of all, I would say that my studies in science gave me way too many possibilities to imagine things. So the first reactions of my brain in order to find solutions was to take the most complicated path, you know. And by discovering in magic, like really practical solutions, and it struck me, like, first of all, when we study like how to say that, like proper science, and with all the not practical science but theoretical science, thank you, it's actually quite complicated. So this has not helped me. It helps me like understanding like deeper psychological things about magic, and maybe be able to love reading science and psychology around the human. But when it comes to proper solutions, you know, proper technical solutions in magic, I would say that my studies have helped me more in a practical way, let's say, through projects we were to work on, like for instance, we had a project working on building a two-way drone, like a helicopter drone and a regular plane drone, being able to switch between the two. And this actually puts you in front of the practical world. Okay, you have to find solutions now. What do you do? And this is, I think magic is also about that. So I think this is it. I think that sometimes there's a in group project, you know, these type of projects were actually made in group, and maybe we have to sort of get influenced a little bit about that, that sometimes magic is created a little bit alone,
too much in isolation.
Exactly. Yeah. So there is an in-between to find, of course, because there is like something touchy about who has created what in magic, which is actually big, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like, for instance, for Sonar and the for instance, the wafer idea, you know, the transformation of the harmonica into the wafer, that was great. It's very, in a way, stupid, but it's so great, you know, because the wafer looks like the harmonica. It has the same shape, the same color and all. And hadn't I listened to Radar, which I talked before of, I wouldn't have done it. He was the one of telling me, you know, the wafer, a wafer looks like a harmonica. And then we tested it in Blackpool, which is actually a very great playground. And they turned out to be the best version so far of harmonica. So no. So, but yeah, your question about science is it's quite hard to answer, to be honest.
No, that's, you gave a great answer. I think it's definitely a good point that you bring up. It's like, you know, it kind of makes me think of Oppenheimer, actually. How it was like they brought together that whole team, you know, and it took all of them working together in collaboration to like put the, took the best minds together to create what they created, you know. And I feel like a lot of the time in magic, we're just like so scared of giving away the secret that we never share it with anyone. And then when we actually, I don't know, it's just never as good if you don't have other people work on it and give you feedback. And I do feel like the Spanish school of magic is really good at that. They're very open and sharing. And when I see them together, they're always like jamming, going back and forth, sharing ideas openly, you know? Whereas it just seems to be like a, maybe more of a Western thing to not do that. But I feel like when you do, the benefits are so massive.
Yeah, I think we're, maybe we're afraid, maybe there are like several points. Maybe we're afraid of getting the ideas stolen, maybe. But maybe we, like as French, we have our pride, let's say, and ego. And it happened to me a little bit about Sonor, to be honest. Like we sort of create a fantasy or something ideal about the effect we're building. I mean, at least it happened for me. Like I had sort of the intuition messages of this, of the fact that Sonor could be something. And I was idealizing it at a certain level that I was not willing to show it, because I was fearing the actual feedbacks that could come from that. And you know, when someone tells you, oh, yeah, this doesn't work as a magic trick, this is a bad sound you're using, this doesn't work, then it sort of touches not the possibility of the trick itself, but it touches what you have fantasized about it. And if you do not, you know, expose the magic like you're working on at a point where it's something you can expose, you know, in the early stages, I think you have like to work a little bit on yourself and not expose it to anyone, so that the initial will you have is not parasitized. There is no parasite that comes into your creation. But once you have sort of the first prototype, it's something you can show. Well, you should definitely show it to friends which you value their vision, and maybe like a layman audience, you know. So it depends on the timing, I think.
No, yeah, I like that a lot. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time here. I feel like we could talk for ages, but maybe I'll just ask one more question. It's a bit of a throwaway question, but it's a question nonetheless. When I was doing my research, I noticed you're a bit of a gymnast, kind of, you know, in your own way. So I wanted to ask, I feel like in gymnastics, it's a lot that could be similar to magic, and obviously not in a lot of ways, it's not similar at all. But in terms of doing like repetitive action and like the discipline and practice, those things are, you know, there's similarities there. I just wanted to know if kind of how those two things in your life have come together and how your magic might help there and how your gymnastics helps with your magic.
That's a great question. So obviously, gymnastics is about repetitive movements and all, but in order to attain a freedom of movement, you know, something which seems elegant, free, weightless, and which is close to actual the movements in nature. What amazes me is people like, which gives this impression of freedom in their movements. I love dancing. I love this type of gymnastics. I love tricking and all. And because it brings the possibility of freedom in movements. And I also love that in magic. I was saying one of the best effects I saw, the one that moved me the most in Blackpool was the Harry Potter feather. I don't know if you've seen it. It's actually like the cheapest effect I bought in Blackpool, but it was the one I loved the most. Definitely, like you open a notebook and you have a feather standing up and starting writing on its own on the notebook. And it actually, like, you see it moving just like in Harry Potter. That's what I liked in Harry Potter, is that they are not making things appear out of nowhere, inventing matter or no, they have the matter, the materials to build things, but they are just using a little bit of magic to animate, you know, the knitting things. And so I think this is what joins why I love gymnastics, you know, trampoline and magic as well. And I definitely want to bring that on stage. The show about the rain will definitely have without saying too much, umbrellas and something a little bit influenced by singing in the rain, things like that. And it's part of you know, gymnastics, dancing is also part of it's a language of the body, you know. This is how, you know, when we start dancing, we can start feeling emotions of liberation, of so yeah, I think mixing that with magic can bring something very interesting. And it's also an exploration. I don't know, maybe it can be a little bit foolish, but we like that. No.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the playfulness. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Before we close out, if people want to hear more from you, where should they go? I mean,
yeah. So you can go on Instagram. On Instagram, my name is Valentin Danneville. So it's a very French name from Normandy. It's spelled Danneville. Ville is like a city or a town in French. And you should so stay tuned for Sonore. It's gonna be released soon with Illusionist, so you can also check regularly on this on their page, on Instagram page. And I think it's the best way to contact me if you ask questions, or Instagram is the best way. So yeah, and it's been an absolute pleasure as well to talk with you and answer your question, Jacob. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. All right, well, thank you, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.